The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Field Yates and Taylor Twellman filling in for Max on this final day of 2020. And we're going to start off this show by talking college football. And nobody better to join us than ESPN college football insider Brad Edwards, giving the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. And Brad, we're just one day away from the college football playoff semifinals that everybody is, of course, looking forward to. But you are going to be on the call of the Liberty Bowl, which starts 3 p.m. with our coverage here today. The game itself is being kicked off at 4 p.m. What should we be looking forward to on that one?
Yeah, so this is Army against West Virginia. And you may remember from the day the bowl matchups were announced that there was no place for Army to go. They're 9-2.
Yeah.
And they had just won over Navy and Air Force in the final 2 weeks of the season. And everyone was excited for Army. And then it just became just the biggest crime against humanity that there was no place for them. And they were patient and they waited. And sure enough, someone had to back out because of COVID issues. And the first team to do it was Tennessee. So they took that spot. And now we have a really intriguing matchup because the teams are so different in styles. Neither one of them could adequately prepare for the other team because they don't have the personnel to replicate and practice what the other one does. Army, obviously, that your traditional triple option style attack. It's the flex bone, more specifically, that Jeff Munkin learned under Paul Johnson. And then on the other side, West Virginia has got a version of the air raid. And so Army doesn't have the players to run the air raid. West Virginia doesn't have the players to kind of mimic that triple option. And so both of them are really concerned about the first quarter, the first few possessions, and how they're going to respond in live action to this.
Brad, Field and I have been talking about Notre Dame and their recent track record into big games. And let's be honest, their track record speaks for itself.
It stinks, yeah.
Are they playing for their credibility tomorrow?
You know, it's hard to say the credibility would get any worse if they were to get blown out again. And there are a lot of different versions of numbers that are going out there, depending on how you want to slice it. The one that I keep looking at is the last three times they've faced a top four team in a championship setting. That was that BCS title game against Alabama. They lost by 28. Mm-hmm. You had the semifinal 2 years ago against Clemson. They lost by 27. And then the ACC championship game a couple weekends ago, they lost by 24. Which they were down 31 in the fourth quarter and tacked on a late touchdown to get that close. And so I don't know that it changes the narrative all that much if they lose by 20-something. But I think if they can keep it competitive, if this game is in doubt going into the fourth quarter, they can take a big step forward as far as enhancing the perception of their program. At the end of the day, does it really make a whole lot of difference? You know, I think what we've seen in this playoff era is that there are three or four teams that have a higher level of talent than everyone else. And when those teams have an elite quarterback, you just can't beat them. And that's the problem that Notre Dame faces here. While they have a good quarterback, they don't have the game breakers around him. I think they've got a really good offensive line. They've got a good running back, but they don't have receivers who can separate. You know, they got big bodies, but they're going to have a hard time getting open. And just without an explosive offense in today's game, it's just hard to beat the very best teams, and I think ultimately that's going to be Notre Dame's downfall.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if they could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Again, we're being joined here by Brad Edwards, ESPN college football insider. And Brad, the other game seems to be more competitive on paper. Ohio State and Clemson, they played in the same setting last year. Clemson wins 29-23, a game that Ohio State was leading early. If we are all sort of in unison believing that Alabama is the decided favorite over Notre Dame, how close on paper is this matchup between Ohio State and Clemson?
I don't think it's as close in reality as it is on paper.
Interesting.
You know, now I think if you look at the rosters, they're very similar in talent. These are two of those teams that I mentioned that just have a different level of talent than everyone else in the country. The problem is that Ohio State is not going to reach its ceiling this year. I don't think that there's any way that they will ever play up to their potential because they didn't play enough games. There was just too much start and stop, guys out with COVID, all the things that we just associate with 2020 at a higher level for them. And a lot of people, you know, wanted to frame it as, hey, you know, they got a break getting into the playoff because of all this stuff. It worked to their advantage. Well, in a certain way, yes, it did work to their advantage to get into the playoff. but it's not helping them win once they get there. You know, I don't know that there's ever been an undefeated team in football that peaked in game number seven, right? I mean, and that's what Ohio State would have to do. They would have to play the best game they could possibly play to beat this Clemson team tomorrow. And I just don't think it's realistic to expect them to be able to do that with the lack of reps they've had, the lack of continuity because of guys in and out of the lineup. Even Justin Fields has not been nearly as sharp as he was a year ago. And he injured his thumb in the Big Ten championship game, which, once again, that was 13 days before kickoff of this game. I don't even know that he's 100% as far as, you know, being able to hold the ball securely and how that will affect his passing. So there are a lot of questions about Ohio State, and I think there are good reasons that Clemson is a solid favorite here.
Brad, but that's it. That's where my head is spinning. So then why is Dabo Swinney so bent out of shape in giving them any kind of motivation they need to get up for the game when you and I both know the Clemson team that showed up against Notre Dame in the ACC championship, Ohio State isn't reaching that level?
Right. Yeah, you would think that the best thing to do is just keep your mouth shut. Don't give them any more motivation.
Absolutely.
And look, they have enough because of last year. I mean, Ohio State was the better team in that game last year, but they had a few things that went against them that were very decisive, and Clemson came away with the win. And, you know, it has irked them all offseason. I think they've really built toward this point, so they're already motivated enough. I would say this, that Dabo at least has been very consistent. You know, that he started talking about this weeks out, that he didn't believe that a team that had only played a certain number of games should get into the playoff. He didn't name Ohio State at that point. But when it came time to cast his final ballot in the coaches poll, he backed up his words by putting them in a spot that, you know, was pretty representative of what he had been saying all along. And you know, he didn't have teams with the same number of games ranked higher than them. It wasn't disrespectful in that way. But it was bulletin board material. You can be sure that, you know, they might have already had T-shirts made up to you know, pull out if they win the game, reflecting what Dabo did. So it is it's curious that he went there, but at the same time, it's just kind of Dabo. You know, he says what he feels. He doesn't really spend much time thinking about it. And like I said, at least he's consistent. And he backed it up on paper.
And speaking generally, he has backed it up, given the fact that they've lost just one game when Trevor Lawrence has been their starting quarterback over the past three seasons. Brad, do you vote for the Heisman?
I do.
Okay, so I know you're not allowed to reveal who you would be voting for in the Heisman Trophy race. But as we look towards tomorrow in Notre Dame, if they're going to have a hope and a prayer, they're going to have to stop one of Alabama's troika of just ridiculous offensive weapons. Who's a priority? Like, how do you choose between DeVonta Smith and also Najee Harris and, of course, Mac Jones?
I think you have to start with DeVonta Smith just because his big play ability is so much greater than Najee Harris. And Florida, to a certain degree, did that. Even Arkansas, the game before that, the last two opponents have tried their best to eliminate the big play. Don't let Alabama hit the home run. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, they did it. And one of the things that's amazing about that performance in the SEC championship game by Alabama's offense is that they only had one play that gained 30 yards. And yet they still had over 600 yards of offense in the game. And it's because Mac Jones had the patience to just take what the defense gave him, check down. A lot of those check downs were to Najee. And, you know, by doing so, they ended up racking up a whole lot of yards and points. But what defenses bank on when they do that is that the quarterback, especially a guy who's used to making a lot of big plays, is going to get impatient. He's going to try to force the ball in. Mm-hmm. And Mac never did that. And if he continues to play that way, you know, the stigma, the phrase that you never want to hear if you're a quarterback today is game manager, right? Like, but that's what playing quarterback is all about. It's about managing the game. And if they're going to give you 8 yards on first down, take 8 yards. And that's what he did. So he's not only a very accurate deep ball thrower and a guy who can generate a lot of big plays, but he's a very good game manager when he has to be. And I think that's the best strategy against them, is don't let DeVonta Smith have the huge plays. Make them get it in smaller increments and then hope you can stop them in the red zone. And I think that's probably Notre Dame's strategy.
Brad, one would argue that Field, Yates, and Taylor Twellman are game managers filling in on the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio right now. But I want to stay with Alabama because I'm going to make this real simple. Is this Nick Saban's best Alabama team he's ever had?
One of the many metrics that we reference is FPI, the Football Power Index. And what it measures is the number of points better or worse than an average team that, you know, each individual team is. And Alabama right now has the highest FPI rating of any team in the 16 seasons that we've been using this metric. And so that goes back to that 2005 season when you had the epic national championship game, Texas-USC, you know, Vince Young and that whole USC offense that was so loaded with Leinart and Bush and company. And Alabama is the most dominant team for the season it plays in relative to everyone else that season of anyone so far. But that's the key, is so far. If they finish it off, if they're able to beat Notre Dame decisively tomorrow and they're able to win the national championship, I think you can make that argument. But as good as all these teams have been under Nick Saban and the number of them that have won national titles, you can't even enter that conversation if you don't have a national championship. They've had some good ones that didn't win it. But I think that's the starting point for this, is do they finish it off in the way that LSU did last year? We were having a lot of these same conversations about LSU. If they run the table, if they beat all these ranked teams along the way, with what they were doing on offense, the numbers they put up, would this be the best team or the best offense in the history of college football? You couldn't give it to them until they sealed the deal. Same thing is true for Alabama here.
ESPN Radio has you covered for bowl game action. Tune in today for the AutoZone Liberty Bowl presented by AutoZone. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Brad will be a part of that, of course. Reminder, the college football playoff semifinals and final are on ESPN and ESPN Radio. Coverage of the Rose Bowl and Sugar Bowl on ESPN Radio begin Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Brad, it's been a year for a lot of us. It has been a particularly interesting year for Florida head coach Dan Mullen, who every time he has seemingly run his mouth and probably should have instead put his foot inside of his mouth, his latest comments coming after last night's loss against Oklahoma, paraphrasing, basically like the 2020 season ended a while ago after several players opted out of the game last night, including their all-world tight end, Kyle Pitts. And they just got thrashed by Oklahoma, including three interceptions in the first half from quarterback Kyle Trask. What do you make of Mullen's recent comments, and what kind of year has he had? Jeez.
Yeah, definitely. He's a lightning rod. but, you know, he's one of those guys that, like, if he's your coach and he's winning, you love him, and you love the fact that everybody else hates him. And that's kind of
those in the SEC.
Yeah, there are in the SEC, and Dabo's kind of become that way, too.
Yeah.
And the Clemson fans rally around him. So I think as long as he's winning, it's going to be fine. But he has looked bad after his losses this year and some of the excuses that he's made. And this is a legitimate excuse. In fact, my argument against it is that he should have said it before the game. Don't wait until after and see how bad you lose. Go ahead and get it out there, because everyone's going to agree with it. It's obvious. You're missing your four top receivers off of a great offense. It's not going to be the same without them. I think they were down 9 starters in all on both sides of the ball. Anyone who follows this stuff was expecting Oklahoma to win that game easily. You know, you'd have to have your head in the sand to think that the ranking to the left of each team was going to be indicative of the way that game played out. And so I don't know why he didn't just say it earlier. That, look, here's the deal. This is like half of our roster. A lot of our best guys are out. We really would have preferred not to play, but it's a New Year's Six game, and the right thing to do is to play it. So we're going to go out there and we're going to give it our best shot with the guys that we have. They're not slouches. Like, most of them are 4-star recruits, sure. But we're getting the team ready for next year. And that's, you know, say that ahead of time and then you don't have to make excuses afterward.
Well, because, Brad, you could have made it a rallying cry, right? And you make the most of the situation. However, he does it postgame. Where you lose me with this as an ex-athlete is, now if I'm returning to the Florida Gators football team next year, what did you just say about me? Like, now all of a sudden I'm looking at my coach saying, well, wait a minute. You just threw me in front of the 18-wheeler. I get it. We're missing 16 players, 9 starters. But, like, it really – I'm flabbergasted by the entire thing, because that is not leadership. That was a brutal moment for Dan Mullen for me.
Yeah, and I've seen this happen with other programs recently. LSU, like, I think it was the year before they won the national championship, they got shut out at home by Alabama. And that wasn't an unranked LSU team. They were probably ranked around 12th or something like that. And Ed Orgeron after the game is just like, we got to get better players. You know, and it's like, you have a top 10 signing class every year. I mean, most teams in the country would kill to have the guys you have. Now, they're not as good as Alabama's guys, and that was obvious in that game. So why these guys make these excuses,
I know.
I don't know. And why they don't think more about what it says about their players, I don't know.
Well, because, Brad, it's the same team where Dan Mullen, one of your players, threw a shoe against LSU that put you in this predicament that you're in anyways. Like, you just be careful here who you're pointing
fingers at. Well, he tried to take up for the guy after the game by saying it was a football move. I mean, give us a break.
Yeah, Dan Mullen's quote board of 2020 is one of the most interesting. We've been having this conversation throughout the week here on ESPN. We'll close it out with you, Brad Edwards, our ESPN college football insider, with this. Who do you believe is under the most pressure on Friday? Is it Justin Fields because of how he has performed in big games? Dabo for all of his comments? Alabama because they're such a gargantuan favorite? Notre Dame because some wonder whether they should be there in the first place? Who is it?
I would say it's on the Ohio State side, and maybe it's Fields if you want to get to a specific person. But you look at everything that happened from last year's semifinal forward, with Ohio State having, in my opinion, one of the best teams to not win a national championship in college football history a year ago. And everything built toward, you know, being able to get that team on the field this year and take care of that situation. And, you know, the way that they fought in order to get on the field to be able to play, it's not their fault that the Big Ten pulled the rug out from under the conference and said, hey, we're not going to play. And then they changed their minds and said, oh, we're going to come back and we're going to play. Oh, and by the way, we've got this COVID thing figured out, this rapid daily testing. You're not going to have any issues now. And, of course, they ended up missing three games after they started late. So I think it's just some combination of Ohio State and the Big Ten. And, you know, after I say all this, maybe my answer is the Big Ten. I think the Big Ten has the most, because if Ohio State gets embarrassed, it's not because they have inferior talent. It's because they didn't have the same opportunity to excel as Clemson and Alabama and some of the other teams did because of what happened to them. And I don't want to make this out to be like everything's fine. We all know everything's not fine in this country. Sure, and COVID is a serious deal.
Absolutely.
And maybe we should have taken sports a little bit less seriously than we have throughout a lot of this year. But just strictly from a sports narrative, I think the Big Ten is going to, they've looked bad already for the last few months. They're going to come out looking even worse if they make this team, I should say make them, if they contribute to this team getting embarrassed on a national stage.
Yeah, well, it's a huge, huge day for all four teams, and specifically Ohio State in the conference. That, according to Brad Edwards, our great ESPN college football insider. Have a great broadcast later on today, Brad, right here on ESPN.
Looking forward to it, and keep saying last day of 2020. It has a nice ring to it.
Last day of 2020. Maybe the only team that doesn't want to see 2020 go is Oklahoma, because Oklahoma was in the zone last night. Get in the Zone is brought to you by AutoZone. Get in the Zone. AutoZone. Coming up, Ryan Fitzpatrick tested positive for COVID-19. We'll get the latest from South Florida. It's the Max Kellerman Show with Taylor Twellman and Field Yates on ESPN Radio. But first, this word from ZipRecruiter.
It's finally a new year. Not yet, but almost there. And it's the perfect time to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be very challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/Max makes it easy. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Max. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Max. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Max. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The latest on the Dolphins quarterback situation next on the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio with Field Yates and Taylor Twellman.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80 plus ESPN Plus rolls along. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Field Yates and Taylor Twellman hanging out with you today on the final day of 2020. And we just heard a moment ago from Christine Lisi that Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Dolphins quarterback, has tested positive for COVID-19. We're going to be joined by ESPN Dolphins reporter Cameron Wolf, who is with us right now. Cam, appreciate you making time for us during what I know is a busy, busy Thursday on the Dolphins beat. What can you tell us about the latest with Ryan Fitzpatrick and what it means for the Dolphins in their must-win game on Sunday?
What's up, Field? Taylor, how you guys doing? It's obviously significant. I mean, Tua is a starter, so it doesn't change who's starting for them. But obviously, as we've seen, Fitz has been the guy they've gone to as their reliever. And yeah, Brian Flores told the team the news this morning during a Zoom meeting that Fitz tested positive for COVID. And, you know, all of the guys have been reacting to it this morning. You know, we just got off a Zoom session with Eric Rowe, who said, you know, they were obviously surprised, and the first thing they think about is his health. But, yeah, they'll have to move on without him. And, you know, the other note of this is because he tested positive, it's probably going to end up being 2 weeks. So if they make the playoffs, there's probably a good chance he'll miss that game next Sunday or Saturday as well because of the positive test.
Cameron, part of this Dolphins conversation is for all of us on the outside talking about how Brian Flores has handled the situation, whether or not Tua is capable to being up for this task going to Buffalo, but you're right in the middle of it. You know, where's the energy of the group? And from your mind, has Flores pushed the right buttons with this entire situation now going into Week 17, knowing he doesn't have his reliever?
Yeah, it's probably been the most unorthodox quarterback situation I've seen since I've covered the league. It's weird because, like, several times this year I've said, oh, man, I don't agree with his decision to go with this guy or this guy. But almost all of them seem to work out. So at this point I'm just like, you know what, maybe you know more than me. I think you look at the situation in two ways. One, they've deemed Tua to be the more efficient quarterback, the guy who can take care of the ball to keep them in the game, and Fitz to be more of the risk taker who can keep them from behind. And also they found a way to make it work with both guys and the locker room. You know, I haven't heard any hints of dissension. You know, everybody might not agree with it, but there hasn't been any locker room issues. Both quarterbacks seem to be okay with it. So, you know, regardless of if you think Fitz should start, Tua should start, it seems like they've maximized it and found a way to make it work for them, even though it's unusual.
ESPN Dolphins reporter Cameron Wilf joins us on the Goodyear Hotline, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Cam, you just mentioned it, like the locker room, there's been no dissension. That's like, and maybe you don't know the answer to this. Maybe this is the magic of Brian Flores, but there's a very fine line sometimes with a locker room of 53 players in, you know, wanting to win, but also having an eye towards the future. How has the team's confidence not wavered in Tua, at least doesn't seem that way at all, given the fact that on occasion, twice notably, he's been yanked in favor of Ryan Fitzpatrick? How does Flo keep inspiring the confidence in these guys like he seemingly has done?
And that's why he's the coach of the year in my mind. I think he's done a lot of things that many coaches wouldn't have. I think the biggest thing for him is that, and we talked to players and him about it this week, he communicates with guys like they're grown men. And a lot of times, you know, we sort of skate around this or try to protect guys' confidence or this sort of thing. From what I've heard, Flo is very direct with guys. He's told Tua, he's told Fitz, this is the way the situation is going to work. This is your role. If you don't play well, I'm going to bring Fitz in. And when you tell a guy straight up, this is how it's going to go, it's hard for them to be upset with you because they know what to expect. So I think that plays a large role in it. I also think this is a very young team that came from last year where all the talk was tanking, and they've seen this team turn around to become one of the better teams in the league in 1 year. So I think that earns Flo a lot of trust in that locker room and his ability to make decisions. So I think all of that together has helped them sort of get away with this sort of quarterback, you know, charade throughout the year. But like you guys mentioned at the top, it's week 17, you got to win a playoff game, and now it's all on Tua.
Is Tua up for it, Cameron? I mean, this is why you got him, right? Is he up for
right.
it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that he has the ability to it. The biggest thing for him is the mental aspect, you know, trying to find that balance between aggressiveness and efficiency. You know, they're going to see if they're helped out by the Bills, if they end up sitting starters or not this week. But if they're not, then he's got to go up there and win a big game. He's got to take those chances. He's got to be willing to make those throws, even if they aren't wide open. So he said all the right things. This week, last week, he said these are things he needs to improve on, and now we have to see it in action. So it's all on him, and I think he has it in him, and we'll see if he can do it.
Well, Tua has certainly risen to the occasion in the past, as he will have to do on Sunday as well. Cam Wilf, we appreciate you joining us here on the Max Kellerman Show.
Thanks,
on ESPN
man.
Radio. All right, great stuff as always from Cam. He does an excellent job covering the Dolphins. Let's sign out for a little bit of Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless here, as we sort of look towards this game on Sunday, Taylor.
Can the Dolphins get it done, in your opinion? So that we don't know. Here's the most important factor that we don't have clarity on right now is whether the Bills will play their guys. But if the Bills do play their guys on Sunday, meaning Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs and all of their best players on defense too, do you think this Dolphins team has enough, specifically with Tua as the only guy at quarterback, to pull an upset and advance to the postseason?
I do. Especially if, as you said, Buffalo says, no, we're going to mix this up and play more with our second string players, then I sure hope so. Otherwise, yeah. Then this offseason, you and I and everyone else is going to be talking about the Dolphins maybe looking at another quarterback because they've got that Houston Texans pick at 5 because of that trade from Bill O'Brien that was wonderfully done from the Texans' perspective. I think he does. Now, answer me this. Why would Buffalo not play their starters? Because they already know Mason Rudolph is starting for the Steelers, and they have the head-to-head tiebreaker?
The same logic that the Pittsburgh Steelers are employing with Ben Roethlisberger. Like, hey, I understand that having the number 2 seed is nice, but is there mitigated importance to home field advantage this year? And the trip to Pittsburgh is not that long as it were. We also handily beat them the last time that we played, not that long ago. Maybe the Bills are saying a week of rest might be more important than the opportunity to play at home in the divisional round of the playoffs.
Yeah, and I lean towards, I think the bye does work, and it works in your favor because this year you don't have a bye, but right. You now actually can incorporate one because you handled your business throughout the regular season. Then Tua has to get it done. He absolutely has to get it done. And to answer your question, I think he can get it done, but we'll find out, which is why now, with this now all of a sudden becomes one of the more intriguing games, where if you asked me this on Monday and Tuesday, Field, I'm not so sure I would have said yes. Now I'm actually really intrigued without Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I got to tell you, you mentioned the possibility of having a top 5 pick via the Houston Texans, and it's so compelling, Taylor, because I think the team truly is committed to Tua. I think we've also learned in recent years, not just, you know, teams picking at the top of the draft, but like, look at what the Eagles did in taking Jalen Hurts in the second round. Now, obviously, the reason why he's playing is because their own starter has been brutal this year in Carson Wentz. But if you end up realizing in this 4-game sample size that Jalen Hurts is a legit starter you can build around, you've got 3 more years of him for like $3 million total. And although it's going to be difficult and painful, you could get rid of Carson Wentz via a trade. I understand there are a ton of financial complications, but the reality is a competent quarterback remains the most valuable roster commodity and chip in all of pro football. So a fascinating day ahead, week ahead, I should say, for the Miami Dolphins. Through the news, for those that may have missed it, Ryan Fitzpatrick tested positive for COVID-19. He is out for week 17 against the Buffalo Bills. That's Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. What was the best sports moment of 2020? Because there's still, I don't know, 8.5, 9.5 hours left in this year. We'll get into that. It's the Max Kellerman Show with Taylor Twellman and Field Yates on ESPN Radio. But first, this word from Straight Talk.
It's time for some Straight Talk. Look, we all drop our phones. It happens. You fumble it, crack it, splash it, kick it, whatever it may be. Well, Straight Talk Wireless now offers this new Platinum Unlimited plan that includes phone protection. Just $65 a month for unlimited talk, text, and data, plus 20 gigs of hotspot and 100 gigs of cloud storage and more, all on the best networks. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. See Mobile Protect terms and conditions at Asurion.com/straighttalk. Limitations and exclusions apply.
What's been the best moment of 2020 in sports? We'll get into that next on the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio with Taylor Twellman and Field Yates.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
It's the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN+. Plus. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Field Yates and Taylor Twellman hanging out with you. We've been with you all day. And just a reminder that 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020, a standalone audio documentary that tells the story of the day the NBA shut down and the pandemic became real for many Americans, as told by those who lived the events of that day, and built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert and Dr. Anthony Fauci. March 11th, 2020 will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in a new one. 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020. Subscribe and listen now wherever you get your podcast. So, Taylor, the March 11th, 2020 podcast is emblematic of how this year was so different and altered and unlike any other that we've had, which got us thinking today about the best sports moments of 2020, because we're more grateful for these sports moments maybe than ever before. Was The Last Dance the best sports moment of 2020, in your opinion?
No doubt. No doubt. And when I look at the poll, it's closely making a run at the sports bubble that you and I put out with Sports Return with the NBA, NHL, and Major League Soccer. But when you think of The Last Dance, timing is everything in life, Field. Mm. And the when that documentary was released, when that came out, at the time when all of us were staring at the walls trying to find a way through this, you picked a story about arguably one of the greatest athletes in any sport of our generation. We all knew the story, Field. We all knew the result. And yet how many people were sitting on pins and needles ready to watch that and see the behind the scenes? I see that and I say, yeah, absolutely, 100%, because of what it meant. And I think when I tell the story to my grandkids about the pandemic and what I did, I think The Last Dance is going to be part of that. And that's why I say, no doubt, it is the best sports moment of 2020. No doubt is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life.
Yeah, it certainly was one of the best moments. My personal edge, as I had mentioned, was just getting sports returning, lumping Absolutely. That into the bubble. And I don't even remember the specific event that was the first that I watched. I do recall, like, shortly into sports returning, at the same time we had the MLS tournament in a bubble, mm-hmm. of course, in Orlando. We had the NBA in a bubble in Orlando, which included the return of Zion Williamson, which, not that, you know, the Pelicans were a dominant team by any stretch last year, but just Zion at that time, still, it was so young into his NBA career when March 11th took place that seeing him return was so exciting and so, you know, just something that we had to look forward to during times where it felt like there was very little to look forward to. Maybe I could pivot it this way, Taylor. If we look ahead to 2021. The best part about sports is usually the unpredictable stuff, but if you had to pinpoint a couple of things that you might be looking towards for this upcoming year, is there anything that is on the horizon that you're saying to yourself, I can't wait to watch that again?
Field, I don't care what sport it is, mm-hmm. but the first event when you know there is 50% capacity of fans Ooh. In that building. In that stadium. I think that will be the symbol of sports and life returning to whatever we want to call normal after this. But that's the only thing I keep doing. I've called over 65 soccer games in 2020.
Wow.
All of them with no fans.
Yeah.
Whether it's in Germany, whether it's in England, whether it's in Italy, whether it's been here in Major League Soccer, how difficult it's been. And yet some of the games I've called, one of them was in Orlando, there was, what, 6,000 people in the stadium. It just felt like life again. And so, Field, for all of those people listening at home, this has been a blunt reminder that the life and soul of sports is fans.
Yeah.
It's the fandom.
It really is. Yeah, and they are the pistons of the engine, right? They just make this thing all work, and they make this all worth it. And, you know,
and more fun.
Sure. And not only watching events that have fans, Taylor, but, like, I can't wait to go to an
Amen,
event myself,
man.
Right?
Amen,
like,
brother.
I remember I used to live in Boston. It hasn't been that long that I haven't lived there. But my wife and I lived very close to not just Fenway Park, but also could walk to the TD Garden, where the Bruins and the Celtics both play. And I remember, especially with the Red Sox, because baseball, there's 81 games, you know, there have been times where I would be invited to a Red Sox game, and I'd, you know, I'm good, right? Like, mm-hmm. they play 81 times this year. Maybe it's not that warm out. Maybe you've got something you have to take care of for work the next day. Whatever it is, right? The next time someone invites me to a sporting event, I don't care. I'll get on a plane and fly halfway around the world if I have to. Right? Because if I have the opportunity to go to one, I won't take it for granted, not for a long time after the year that we've had this year.
I couldn't agree with you more, Phil. as excited as all of us are that December 31st, 2020 is here and that 2020 is going to be gone, we all, this is a gentle and simple reminder to all of us, we still got to roll up our sleeves. We've still got to put our heads down and fight our way through this. But that sporting event that kickstarts everything, where fans are going and tickets and you've got the smell of food and beer and everyone celebrating, Field, that will symbolize where we are as a society, where we are in the world with this pandemic and where it is. And that is why, that's the one thing. I could care less who's playing. Yep. I could care less what the sport is. I don't care. What I do care about is just the glimmer of hope that we've survived this. We've gotten through a real thick of it, but as COVID has reminded me over the last 4 or 5 days, it's not out of here yet, and it's not going to be for a while. I know it has reminded you as well. It's just we've got to find a way to get to where 2021, where you and I are covering sports, fans are there, we're going to sports, we're having beers, and we're talking about sports returning to the norm.
Yeah.
Until then, I've got better hair than you.
I don't know. That's debatable. Did we get a final tally on the tweet?
Did we get it? Did you won?
Ah,
you won.
Let's go. My first victory in a while.
Happy New Year, Field.
Taylor, you've had much more success in your career. you've got much more going for you than I ever will.
That's debatable.
So I'll take the hair.
That's
I'll take the hair. Take whatever win I can get. Yeah. And by the way, if I could choose an event, like if I can fast forward past the part where I'm just grateful to have events, like I can't wait for the Masters. I can't wait for the Olympics if they have fans. And of course, I can't wait for any and every football game, both professional and college. But speaking of college football, not only do we have the college football semifinals tomorrow exclusively on ESPN and ESPN Radio, but coming up next here on ESPN Radio, it's the AutoZone Liberty Bowl presented by AutoZone. Thanks for hanging out. Field Yates and Taylor Twellman on ESPN Radio.
Max, the podcast.